Well, what's up, M12? How are you guys doing? Nice. Awesome. Very good. Well, I'm excited to be here with you guys tonight. I got two things, housekeeping things, before we get started. First is, we love the Thunder Six. Please don't do it while I'm speaking. I'll get real sad. I might cry. You don't want to see me cry. Trust me, it's ugly. I'm an ugly crier, okay? But for real, please do not do that. Second thing, who wants to be involved in a little bit of payback against somebody that did something really mean to me, okay? Let me tell you what just happened to me. Okay, you guys know our friendly sister campus, the Sugarloaf campus, right? You guys know Sugarloaf campus. How many of you guys are at camp? You know some people from Sugarloaf campus. Well, they've got a guy over there named Steve. Steve's a good friend of mine, but Steve did something really, really kind of mean to me, okay? He got all his students to text me and basically say that Sugarloaf campus is the best and all this stuff. Okay, so I got like 100 texts from these kids. So here's what we're gonna do. I need you guys to pull out your phones and I need you to do something, okay? We're gonna throw Steve's number up on the screen and I need you guys to take in like a mean mug selfie, okay? Take a selfie of you just going, all right, something like that, a mean mug, and say, don't mess with Central Campus. Okay, so his number is going to be up on the screen here. See it very right down here. This number right here, 404-394-1707. So take a mean mug selfie. Can we make that bigger, maybe? Kids in the back can't see. So text it to that number, mean mug, don't mess with Central Campus, and then we'll be done. All right? Cool. How are we coming? Good. Okay, once you get the selfie and you send it and everything, you can put your phone away. Unless you're using your Bible app, then you can keep it out. All right. So let's bring it back in. I know that was fun. That was fun. Let's bring it back in real quick because we've got a lot to talk about tonight. Shh. There we go. Thanks. We've got a lot to talk about tonight, but I want to give the full time for that, okay? Shh. Listen up. So we've been in this Home Run Life series, and this is a series our whole church has been in, and basically the whole idea of this series is we want to be people who live successful, fulfilling, God-honoring kind of lives. And so to do this, we've been looking at this analogy, this picture of a baseball diamond, and we've been using the four different bases of the baseball diamond: home plate, first, second, and third, and each of these bases have a different focus and a different win. Okay, so for example, a home plate, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, this is during the snowpocalypse. You guys remember? We had a little video message for you. Home plate is the connect base. And this is where we learn how to connect with God, how we learn how to win with God. And just like in baseball, you can't start running the bases until you made contact, until you connected with the ball. It's the same way in the home run life. We can't go on to these other bases. And so we connect with God at home plate. And so we talked about a verse in John 15:5, which says that God is the vine and that we are the branches. And it says that if we abide in the vine, if we stay connected into God, connected into the vine, we'll bear much fruit. We will live these kind of home run lives that we want to live. But apart from the vine, apart from God, we can do nothing. We can do what? Nothing. Nothing. So that's the importance of home run and or home plate. Last week, Pastor Derek was here, and he talked to us about which base? No, come on. Home plate, then what? First. There you go. Okay, you're with me now. First base. First base is the character base. And we talked about how if we're going to be people that live home run kind of lives, we have to be people of character. We talked about how character is different than reputation, right? Character is different than reputation because reputation is what other people think about you, but character is who you really are. And so that was first base. Tonight, we're going to talk about second base, right? Because what comes after first? Nice! You guys are so smart. I'm proud of you. Second base. Shh. Second base. We're going to talk about second base. And this is the community base. This is a community base, and it's all about winning with other people. Now, some of you guys might be thinking, why? What does this have to do with the home run? Why do other people have to do with this? You know what I'm saying? Because this is my home run life. Why do I need to win with other people? This is my home run life. But guys, the truth is that if God wanted us to live alone, he would have just stopped with Adam. You know what I'm saying? He would have just stopped. He wouldn't have made Eve. You wouldn't even be sitting here right now. But the truth is, in Genesis 2:18, God says that it is not good for man to be alone. And so he created Eve to be Adam's partner and to do other things. But we're not going to talk about those things until our relationship series. I'm just kidding. All right. Yeah. But God desires, guys, the design that God created was for us to live in community with other people. And the reality is, in order to be people who live a home run life, in order to be people who live successful, fulfilling, God-honoring kind of lives, we've got to learn how to win with other people. That's the reality. So before we jump into this too much, I want you guys to do something real quick. I want you guys to think about your very best memory. Think about your very best memory. You know what I mean? So that one memory that if you could have a soundtrack with it, it'd be like, I'm the main, I'm the main, I'm the main. You know what I'm saying? That one memory that, like, every time you think about it, you start smiling. Okay, you guys got your memory?
Yeah.
Now let me ask, Let me ask you guys a question. In this memory, are you guys alone or are other people there? Other people are there. So for the vast majority of us, there you go. For the vast majority of us, other people are present and are good memories. Because people make good things even better. They make the good memories even better. So how many of you guys have ever made like a game-winning shot or a goal or something like that? Oh, man. Dang, there's a lot of you guys. Either you are a lion or you're very athletic. One of the two. Shh. Listen up. My hand is not up. I did not do that ever. All right. But if you guys did make that, you did a game-winning shot once. Let me imagine this for a second. Just come with me real quick. Imagine you made that same shot, but nobody else was there. You know what I'm saying? So it's like clock's like 3, 2, 1, buckets, and you're just going around jumping, like trying to high-five the air, but nobody else is there. Not quite as satisfying, is it? No, because other people is what made that moment amazing, right? Because you got dogpiled and you might have broken your arm, but it was totally worth it because you made that game-winning shot. You know what I'm saying? Because people make the good memories even better. Now, on the flip side of this, I want you to think of your worst memory. Ooh. Think of it. You don't need to talk. Just think. So think about a bad memory. Maybe it was a moment of pain or embarrassment. Or when somebody hurt you. Now in this memory, you might be alone, but I'll bet that people were involved somehow. They either caused this or they were directly involved in you feeling hurt or embarrassed or something like that. So I want to tell you guys about one of my embarrassing memories. Okay, so when I was in first grade, I can remember, this is one of my most vivid memories of my childhood. Okay, so I was in first grade. I was in my classroom with the rest of my class. And we had this teacher named Miss Randall. And for some reason, Miss Randall had to leave. She had to leave the classroom. And so when she left, for whatever reason, she turned off the lights. Even though we're all still in there, you know what I'm saying? Probably not the greatest idea to leave a bunch of first graders in the classroom with the lights off. Whatever. That's fine. So she leaves and we're all just sitting in there. And then it kind of like just hits me. Like it only does when you're a kid. It hits me, I gotta pee. Like, I gotta pee real bad. So we had one of those bathrooms that was like attached to the classroom. You guys have one of those? You know what I'm talking about? So I run back to the bathroom in the back of the room, and I go in there, I turn on the lights, I shut the door. And if you're never a six-year-old boy, you probably don't know, but maybe you do. We don't like to mess with pants when we are, like, doing our business, number one. You know what I'm saying? So there I was, pants around my ankles, doing my business, when all of a sudden this door that I thought I had closed slowly starts to creak open. Right? And until it's standing full open, and I'm on full display for my whole class to see. You know what I'm saying? And remember, it's dark in there, so they're like, oh, the light. And then they're like, oh! And it's not like I can stop. I've already started. I don't have that kind of control at 6 years old, okay? So all I have to do is stand there until I finish my business while my whole class is watching me. Utterly humiliating. Guys, this is traumatic for me. I'm 6 years old, all right? Traumatic. Traumatic. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. This would have been no big deal if I was by myself, okay? This would have been like every other day at my house. You know what I'm saying? My mom was always telling me to close the door. But because I was in front of my entire classroom, this was a humiliating experience for me. It was a bad experience because here's the reality. People make the good things even better, and the embarrassing and painful things hurt even worse. Even worse. Now, there's a... here's the deal. There's a reason why people oftentimes say that life would be so much easier if it weren't for people. Have you guys ever heard that? You've ever heard somebody say that? Life would be so much easier if it weren't for people, because sometimes people just suck. Let's be honest. Sometimes people are horrible. Whether it's like a parent or a teacher or someone at school or your entire first grade class or a sibling, people will let you down. Shh. Over the course of your life, people will let you down. They'll lie to you. They'll go behind your back. They'll spread rumors about you. They'll hurt you. But here's what I know. Those very same people that cause you pain and cause you harm are exactly who God has placed in your life for the intention and the purpose of teaching you how to win with people and how to win at second base. And if we're going to be people who live the kind of successful and fulfilling and God-honoring kind of lives that we need to win in home run, we got to learn how to win here at second base. We got to learn how to win with people. One of my favorite books is it's a book called Into the Wild, and they made it into a movie. You probably don't see it because it's rated R. But, shh, listen, this is a true story. This is why I like this. It's a true story about this guy named Chris McCandless. Okay, and Chris was a 20-something, fresh out of college, and he reached this point in his life where he just got so fed up with people and with society and his parents and people in his life that he said, forget it. And he sold everything he had. He burned all his IDs and all that stuff. And he hitchhiked his way out to Alaska. And his goal was, I'm going to go to Alaska and I'm going to just go into the wild by myself and live completely free from other people. And that was his goal. And so he does this and he makes it all the way out to Alaska. And for a while, everything is great. He's loving it, right? It's just mountains and wildlife and everything around him. It's completely untouched by anybody else. And it's intoxicating to him. He loves it. But then after a while, it starts to fade. And that joy that he first experienced starts to fade away. And he can't put his finger on it. He can't figure out what is going wrong because he has everything he thought he wanted. And then to make matters worse, he eats this poisonous plant that literally causes his body to start eating itself. And so he's starving to death. He's completely alone. Nobody knows where he's at. And he's starving to death. He is dying. And it's on his deathbed that he comes to this epiphany moment. He wrote down, happiness is only real when shared. Happiness is only real when shared. All his life, he had been pushing people away because he thought that they were preventing him from living the kind of full and happy life that he wanted. But then at the end of his life, when he had everything he thought he wanted, there's no one to share it with. And so it was meaningless. It was meaningless. And it was at the end of his life, before he could do anything about it, that he realized that instead of trying to learn how to remove people from the equation, he should have learned to win with people. How to have people a part of the equation and win. And so how do we learn how to win with people? How do we set ourselves up to win here at second base? That's the question that we're going to wrestle through tonight. And if you guys have been in this series, you know that we've been looking at the story of Joseph in the Old Testament. And we're going to land there again tonight. We're going to talk about this. So if you would, grab a Bible under your chair in front of you. And you're going to turn to Genesis chapter 37. It's on page 39. Genesis 37. And while you're flipping there, I'll kind of give you a summary of who Joseph is for you, those of you who might not know. So Joseph, he was the son of Jacob. He's one of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Jacob had, he had 12 sons in total. And at this point in the story, Joseph is number 11. He's the baby. Okay, so he's got 10 older brothers, and he's the baby. And guys, he's the favorite. Okay, any of you guys, isn't that how it normally is, right? In families, the youngest is like the baby, they're the favorite. You know what I'm saying? Yes. How many of you guys are the youngest in your family? Are you guys the favorite? Oh. Okay, shh. Some of you guys are like, no, I'm not the favorite. I'm totally not. Let's be honest, you are. They love you more. They give you more presents at Christmas. Let's be real. Shh. My little sister's the baby, and she's totally the favorite. Totally the favorite. But anyway, so Joseph is the favorite. He's the baby. And his dad loves him even more than all his other sons. The Bible tells us this, that Jacob loved Joseph most of all, and he gave him better gifts. So he, like, Joseph had this crazy, like, multicolored coat, which I guess was a cool thing back then. Now everyone would just make fun of you if you wore that. But Joseph had this nice coat, and his dad loved him more than all his other brothers. And his brothers hated him for this. They hated him. So much so that they decided they're going to make a plot to kill him. I know, right? And this is where we're going to pick up in the story. Shh. So if you're there, Genesis chapter 37, page 39, we're going to start in the second half of verse 17. So follow along with me as I read, all right? So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. Let's not take his life, he said. Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. And skip down into verse 28. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. So here's what happens. His brothers throw him into this pit, which is, it's called cisterns, where they collect rainwater. It's just a giant pit in the ground. And then these slave traders come by, and they sell their brother Joseph to these slave traders for 20 pieces of silver. And they take him all the way to Egypt. And guys, this is a bad day for Joseph. You know what I'm saying? He just went, his dad told him to go hang out with his brother. So he goes, he's minding his own business. And the next thing he knows, he gets thrown into a pit and then sold to slave traders. Crazy. I mean, let's be honest. We've all thought about selling our younger siblings, right? We've all thought about it. Let's be real. But these guys actually went through with it. They sold him. They sold their brother. I think it's safe to say at this part of the story, Joseph is not winning with people. He is not winning with people. Second base is not winning for him. He just tripped over second base and got a face full of slavery. You know what I'm saying? This dude is having a bad day. And guys, I wish we could read the rest of this story here tonight. It's a long story, but I encourage you guys to read it on your own. But here's a basic overview. Here's what's going on. Joseph, over time, he goes to Egypt as a slave. And over time, he rises in the ranks. And over a period of years and crazy events, he goes from being a slave, the lowest of the low, all the way up to being second in command in all of Egypt. He's second only to Pharaoh, who's like the king. You know what I'm saying? So he rises in the ranks in some pretty amazing ways. And so it's clear that over these period of years, somehow Joseph learns how to win with people. He's risen in success, and he's risen in the ranks. He's second in command of all of Egypt. He is winning with people. Not only is he winning here at second base, he's also gone on to third base, which we're going to talk about next week, which is the competency base. It's all about how we win results and be successful. Joseph is second in command. He's pretty dang successful. You know what I'm saying? So he is winning this home run life right now. But then there's this crazy plot twist in the story. And Joseph's brothers, who had once sold him into slavery, they come to Egypt during a drought because they needed to buy food. They have no food to survive. So they come to Egypt to buy food. Joseph immediately recognizes him, or all these guys, as his brothers. Immediately recognizes them. And so he has a decision to make. Joseph has a decision to make. Will he give in to his feelings of anger and revenge and retribution? And would he punish his brothers for what they had done to him? Or would he humble himself and forgive? Was he going to keep running the bases like he had learned how to do? Or is he going to make a compromise here at second base that would potentially throw his entire life off course? If you guys know the story of Joseph, you know that he makes the right decision. He chooses to forgive his brothers and restore their relationship. And by doing this, he shows us how we can win at second base, how we can win with other people. And so for the rest of the time, we're going to talk about three keys from the life of Joseph to winning at second base. And if you guys are taking notes, these are things you're going to want to write down, because while they might sound simple, if we learn how to put these things into practice now, we're going to set ourselves up to win at second base and beyond. We're going to set ourselves up to win with people. And so the three keys to winning at second base, the first one is this: humble yourself. Simply to humble yourself. Guys, humility is a little bit tricky. Humility is tricky. Humility is tricky. Tricky to say, obviously. But I think a lot of times we mistake being humble with putting ourselves down, with self-degradation, putting ourselves down. But that's not what humility is. That's not what the Bible teaches. There's a quote by C.S. Lewis that I love. I think it's gold. And he explains to us what true humility is, and I think they're going to put it up on the screen. It says, true humility is not about thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. You guys catch that? You catch the difference in that. It's not about thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less, as in less often. So in other words, it's not about putting yourself down. It's about lifting others up. It's about thinking of others before yourself. In Philippians 2:4, Paul tells us that we should not look to our own interests, but look to the interests of others. We shouldn't have our eyes fixed upon ourselves and what we need and what we want, but rather we should fix our eyes on other people and put their needs above our own. Think about others before you think about yourself. And this takes practice. Yes, it takes practice. But don't overthink this, guys. Start small. Start small. It doesn't have to be huge, grandiose things. Think of others above yourself, though. So don't be the first one to voice your opinion all the time. Don't be the guy to take the last cookie every time. You idiot. Let other people take the cookie. All right? When your ride comes to pick you up tonight, let somebody else call shotgun. You take the back seat middle. It's a cool seat anyway. Take the hump seat. You know what I'm saying? Shh. Shh. But guys, here's what I know. Here's what I know. If we make these decisions, even though they might seem small, like not calling shotgun, if we make these decisions enough times, over time they're going to develop into habits. And sooner or later, you're going to have the habit of thinking of other people before you think of yourself. So that's the first key to winning at second base: humble yourself. The second key is to forgive what you can't forget. Forgive what you can't forget. Here's the truth. Across this room, many of you have been hurt by other people. Many of you have been hurt by other people. Maybe someone lied to you or spread a rumor about you or went behind your back. Or maybe someone did something to you a long time ago that you can't shake. You can't shake. And those feelings of pain have turned into these feelings of anger and bitterness. And you know there's not a chance that you're going to forget. You're not going to forget what was done to you. Guys, God never sets the expectation for us to forget. He doesn't expect us to forget what's happened. But he does expect us to forgive. That is what he expects us to do. And forgiveness, guys, forgiveness isn't easy. I know it isn't. It takes time, and it's hard. And a lot of times we don't want to do it. But that's what we're called to do. If we're going to live the home run life, if we're going to live the kind of successful and fulfilling and God-honoring kind of lives that we're called to live, we've got to learn to forgive. Surrender your right to be angry. Oh, I wish somebody had told me that a long time ago. Surrender your right to be angry. The world will tell you that if someone does something wrong to you, you have a right to be angry. You have a right to seek revenge. You have a right to make it right. That's not how God wants us to live. You have no right to be angry as a Christ follower. You have no right to revenge. What does Jesus say? If someone strikes you on the cheek, what are you supposed to do? Turn the other cheek. Forgive. It's not easy. And it takes time, and it's not as much as of a choice as it is a lifestyle. A life that you're going to have to live and choose to live every day. But forgive what you can't forget. The third key to winning at second base is to ask God to give you love for people. Ask God to increase your love. Because here's the reality. People are hard to love a lot of times, especially when they kind of suck. You know what I'm saying? People are hard to love. How many of you guys know someone in your life who is just super hard to love? How many of you guys are sitting next to that person right now? Just kidding. Don't raise your hand. Don't raise your hand. Shh. But we all have those people in our life, right? We all have those people in our life that are just impossible to love. It's like they know exactly how to get under your skin. And every time you're around them, you're just fighting the urge just to punch them straight in the throat. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Shh. Oh, that's just me. Yeah, I don't do that either. Weird. Shh. But guys, if you're like me and you have those kind of people in your life that are just super hard to love, I've got some news for you. Here's some good news. You don't have the ability to love that person. Some of you guys are like, nice, off the hook. No, sorry, you're not off the hook. That's not what that means. Shh. You don't have the ability to love those people, but God does. God does. In 1 John 4:7, it says, dear brothers, let us love one another because love comes from God. Love comes from God. So here's what this means. That while we don't have the ability in ourselves to love those kind of people in our lives, God does. And so the next time you're around somebody like that, you don't just go, sorry, bro, I don't have the ability to love you, so I'm just going to punch you in the throat. No, bad. Don't do that. When you're around those kind of people, here's what your responsibility is as a Christ follower. Here's what your responsibility and obligation is: to ask God to give you love for them. And he will. I promise you he will. And it will be weird, and you probably won't like it at first, but he will give you the ability to love those people, even those that you think are impossible. There's no way. He will give you the ability if you ask him. And you need to ask him. And so, guys, what is God saying to you? What is he kind of poking you in the side right now, saying, hey, you need to do this. Maybe you need to humble yourself. Maybe you need to stop looking at yourself and in your own needs and your own wants all the time. You start thinking about others first. Maybe you need to forgive someone. To forgive what you can't forget. To surrender your right to be angry, to let it go, and to forgive. Maybe that's what he's telling you. Or maybe he's just telling you, you need to ask me to give you love for those people. Because I love them. They're my children, and you have no right to decide who I will love and who I won't. And you need to love them. So guys, wherever you're at tonight, as we're going to get ready to close, but wherever you're at, I want us to do some business with God in here tonight. And as we go into connection groups, I want us to do business with God. I want us to talk with God and ask him to help us win here at second base. Because, guys, if we're going to live the home run life, we can't just skip over second base. It doesn't work like that. You can't just go from first to third and forget about people. You can't be like Chris McCandless and just go off to Alaska and say, screw people, I don't want to deal with it. Guys, in the home run life, people are inevitable. And if we're going to live the successful, fulfilling, God-honoring lives he calls us to live, we're going to have to learn how to win with people. And so in your connection groups, guys, be vulnerable enough to admit where you're falling short and where you need to start winning tonight. That's why we have connection groups in the first place, because we know that we're supposed to live in community, right? God doesn't want us to be by ourselves. The Christian life isn't supposed to be lived alone. It's supposed to be lived in the context of community. So that's what you guys have. You have that. Don't neglect that. Take advantage of it. And as I pray here tonight to close this out, I want you guys to be praying with me, and I want you guys to be asking God to give you what you are lacking, to give you the humility, to give you forgiveness for other people, to give you love for other people. Ask God for those things. So why don't you pray with me right now? Bow your heads. God, we thank you for loving us first. We thank you that, God, even though we have no ability in ourselves to love you or love other people, you give us your love first. And God, we know that we're not supposed to just live our lives alone. We're not supposed to neglect people. But God, as Christ followers and as followers of you, we're supposed to learn how to win with people. And so God, would you help us to win here at second base? Would you help us to win with other people? For those in here tonight who are dealing with pride, God, would you cause them to be humble and show them that true humility is not thinking less of yourself, but it is thinking about yourself less. And for those here tonight who are dealing with baggage from people, and they just need to forgive, would you allow them and give them the ability and the strength and the boldness and the courage to forgive what they can't forget? God, and for those here tonight who are just dealing with people in their life that they don't know how to love, would you give them love for those people? And would you remind them, whenever they're around them, they need to ask you for that love. Ask you to give them and grant them love for those people. So God, we thank you that you're with us. We thank you that your presence is so near to us here in this place. And we thank you for your son, and it's in his name that we pray all those things. Amen.